Welcome to Master the Start, a podcast for young professionals where we interview business experts on how you can master the start of your life in business.
Hola, guten Tag. I have no idea what language that is, but I think I just said hello, everyone, and I definitely didn't add this part, but welcome back to the Master Start podcast. We are so pumped to have you here this week because, believe it or not, we are on episode number 16 of Master the Start. And don't forget, this lovely episode is presented by GoMahi.com. And we have one special, very exciting episode for you today. Dr. Ronald Mason. Yes, he is for sure my father. And I would say, don't turn this episode off just because he's related to me. Because I would have to say, I might be a little biased, but I'd have to say these are some of the best stories we've had on our show so far. So, quick background on Ronald. Dr. Mason, MD, he's an anesthesiologist specialist, and he works all over the Twin Cities in Minnesota, and he has been practicing for 35 years. He graduated from the University of Minnesota Medical School in 1984. And he's also dipped his feet into business. So he started a couple companies, he's invested in others, and he continues to pursue his passion in real estate investing. So if you like all things medicine, but you also like all things business, or you just like one or the other, this is definitely an awesome episode for you. So settle in, subscribe to us on iTunes, Spotify, iHeart, or Google Play. Also, please comment on your thoughts about the show. They could be good comments, they could be bad comments. We really don't care. We just want to hear your input and get your feedback so we can make it better for you or figure out what's working for you and improve upon that. Enjoy this week's episode of Master the Start. We'll talk at the end. All right, everybody. Welcome back to Master the Start. You already had our intro. And you already heard that I am talking to my one and only father today.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
And honestly, you may think, you know, this was a cop-out. We're just talking to people we know. But that's not the case. My father is legitimately one of the smartest people I have ever met. And I think you are going to find, from this podcast, he has had some crazy life experiences. So if you're interested in at all about business, but on top of that, you're interested in medicine, you're going to hear some stories. So I'm pumped. Thank you, Dad, Ron Mason, for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
I want to just start right out of the gate. I want to start with medical school. I think the whole medical school stories, I think they're pretty interesting. I'd really like you to touch on the fact that you came home for holidays one time and you seem to have forgotten how to laugh and show emotion.
Well, you're right. It was terrible. It was absolutely terrible. I don't know if it was medical school or residency. You know, in the old days, we used to work really hard in our training. And one of the things, I was very fortunate. I was accepted to one of the top anesthesia residency programs in the country, one of the top two. I remember one of the residents complained to the chief once about working 36 hours every third day, I think it was. And chief, I can't do it on something that would be publicized, what the chief said, but he made it very clear that he says, you know, when I was in my training, we were on call every other day and we complained because we missed 50% of the good cases. And here, he says, why are you complaining? You're only working 36 hours every third day. So anyway, so we were working really hard, and we were really busy. And it got to the point where, like he'd say, if anyone was caught moonlighting, they were kicked out of the program. So because of working so hard, I remember coming home for Christmas one time. And I remember sitting there, and I was, in essence, so used to working that I remember watching everyone around me kind of laughing and having a good time, and I was like, felt like I couldn't relate. And it took me probably a year before I started living life again and starting to fit in again. So that was kind of a strange story.
Okay, so I think it's really important for our audience and just people in general. I think a lot of people, they look at people in the medical industry and they say they're getting paid way too much money to do the jobs that they do. I think some people fail to recognize how much work you have to put into it to become good at that craft. So I know you've told me since I was a kid, like the stories about you working 24-hour shifts and then going home for 6 hours, then working another 24. Could you just explain like what a week looked like in Dr. Mason's life?
Oh, you know, in our training, now they have laws now that you can't work a resident as hard as we worked. It's against the law. I just remember I would be interviewing patients at times, and I remember one time I was interviewing a patient and I could not stay awake. I'm sitting there at his bedside and I'm talking to him, getting him prepared for surgery for the next day. And I could not stay awake. And this happened more than once, but this one time I was sitting there and the patient goes, "Dr. Mason, you know, I'm sure you've got some things to do. I let you sleep for a while, but you should probably wake up now." So, and talk about a sense of confidence if you got this guy who's going to put you to sleep and he's sitting there sleeping while he's interviewing you. But
so what was, like, what did a week look like?
Oh, a typical week. You know, we would, this is getting so long now, it's hard for me to really remember. So, but a typical week would be, you know, we typically started early in the morning. You know, we were usually in the hospital by 6 in the morning. We would do cases. I remember doing cases and you'd be on call. And if you were on call, you were lucky to get a break to have a bite to eat, you know, around dinner time. I don't know what time that might be, 6, 7, 8, 9 o'clock. Didn't really matter. And the thing is, it was a hospital that did a lot of trauma. So we were doing difficult cases that were kind of intense. I'll just tell you one story about when I had to run down to the emergency room one day because they had a gunshot patient in. He got shot through the chest and it hit his heart, and we had to take this guy straight to the operating room right away. And I went down to the emergency room, and you know, the ambulance comes in, and we got the whole crew down there, just everything moving really quick to get the patient to sleep, get him in to the operating room. And this is a little aside story, I guess, but his mom was there. His mom is the one that shot him because the guy was a drug abuser and kept stealing and threatening his mother. This poor guy was addicted to drugs and even being abusive to his mom. And the last thing she said when we took him away is she cussed at him and said, "And I hope you die." And unfortunately, the guy did die. But going back to what I was talking about, it was high intensity. And what happens when you're working under a stress level like that, you get even a little more tired than what you are just working at a desk job, because there's a lot of stuff that you're paying attention to all at the same time. But anyway, so a typical day would start early in the morning, and if we were on call, we would oftentimes work until the next morning when the next crew came in. And then if they were short, we'd have to do cases in the morning. Then we'd get to go home. And by the time I get to go home, oftentimes, I remember I'd be so tired, I'd make it to my home, but I'd never make it in my home because I'd fall asleep in my car. So I'd sleep in my car, and then, you know, I'd usually wake up maybe somewhere around noon to 2 in my car. Still remember laying in the car, and I'd open up my window so I could get my feet out the window because I'm a little big for that car. And I'd wake up, I'd go lay down for a little bit, and then I'd be back in the hospital to see patients for the next day by about 4. And then we'd start all over. We typically had Sundays off unless we were a call, or Saturdays we had things. We had tests oftentimes on Monday, so we were studying at night. So it was just a matter of you didn't spend a lot of time doing a lot of things other than trying to learn your trade and things like that. And it's interesting because, Bob, I know I see you. You've heard these stories as embellished as they have been over the years. And you were informative at those years, so you believe them, right? So anyways, I see in you a great desire to work hard. And it's a blessing. I see how it's paying off for you, too, all the things that you do.
Thank you. That was a quick plug for the old Bobby Mason there, so that's right. Everyone get excited about me. So you worked in a prison, or the hospital was conjoined with the prison at one point?
That was the greatest. If you want another story, just the greatest. So this was in Texas. So when you're in Texas, you know, so the deal is this was a high security prison. These prisoners were being flown in from all over the country. Not the country, all over the state of Texas. And it was high security prison. So you couldn't even go in to see a prisoner with a tongue depressor because they'd make weapons out of things like tongue depressors. Guys were known to tear apart their box springs and take the springs out of their hospital beds and make weapons out of them. I mean, it was very interesting.
So how do you get a job like that? Like, was it assigned or is it a volunteer thing?
Well, we had to take care of these guys. So one of the things I always found interesting, so now we're in a high secured prison, but then they go to the operating room, which was, you know, in the regular hospital part, and they would have a armed guard walking like 20 feet in front of these guys. These guys are handcuffed and leg cuffed to the gurney. Right. And then they've got a guard pushing them. And then they have another armed guard walking behind them, like 20 feet behind them. The guy who's pushing them is not armed. He doesn't have a weapon because he didn't want to be overtaken with someone with a weapon. So then they come into the preoperative area and they put an armed guard outside the way outside door, another armed guard in the door to that room. And then the guy will come in. When I'd come up to the guys, then the guy would come, they'd say, okay, we're done. And they'd unlock the patient and they would leave the room. And here I'm sitting here thinking, you know, here we got a bunch of little nurses and, you know, what the heck? And these guys are gone. So I'd always have a syringe of a medication that would take an elephant down if I needed it. So now because you're going to edit this, I'll tell you another story. So there was a prisoner once that was in the intensive care unit. The anesthesia department also was in charge of the intensive care unit. And I'm not going to say names, but we had a guy from Louisiana, a staff guy who was in charge of the intensive care units. And this guy was a wild man. He was just great. To do the stuff that you did medically, you got to be really wild. Well, this prisoner was giving the nurses a lot of grief, and he was not being polite. And I remember the staff guy goes into the patient's room, he closes the door behind him, and rumor has it what he told this patient, and this guy is wild, his hair is going everywhere, he looks like he could be a psychopath. He was brilliant. He kind of looked like an Einstein, but he goes, he pulls the chair up and sits next to the patient, pulls the syringe out of his pocket and says, buddy, you got to mind your manners. He says, you see this syringe? I could give you this and you would be dead. And no one would ever know why you died. He said, so here's the deal. If I see you abusing my nurses one more time, I can order this. Someone give it to them, and they won't have any idea what happened. So you mind your manners, or you're going home, and then not to prison. Got up, walked out of the room, and the guy was a model citizen from that day on. Well, a model patient, I should say. So, yes.
Jeez. Well, those are all fascinating stories. That's why I want to get into. So did you fly with the Coast Guard for a little bit?
It was a trauma hospital I worked at. So they had helicopters. So the deal is I worked as a helicopter doc for a little bit. I remember when I was doing this, it was before there were some of the regulations. And what happened is the guys that flew the helicopters, they call them jet copters. The guys that flew the helicopters were almost all ex-Vietnam vets that flew around Vietnam. And these guys, they were wild men. And they, for emergency helicopters, I understand they did not have any regulations. You could fly at any height. You could fly at any speed. So I remember receiving a handful of newspaper articles. That was before the internet. So I received a handful of newspaper articles in the mail and from friends saying, oh, this helicopter went down doing an emergency, you know, landing, and this helicopter crashed, and this, and it was a bad storm. We were on Galveston Island, and it was a bad storm. It gets pretty windy. It was raining cats and dogs, and we have a call. And I remember the pilot says, they say, well, you think you guys can go? And they talk to the pilot. So I remember I go outside with the pilot. He goes to where the helipad is, and he's looking, you know, just kind of feeling the wind and the rain. And he looks at me and he goes, well, yeah, I think we can do this. And I'm like, hey, man, listen, the airport's closed. There is an ambulance. What the heck are you talking about? You know, I'm like, you know, I hate, Bobby knows, I hate heights. You get me on the second rung of a ladder, and that's scary for me. And here I am in a helicopter, you know, and he's flying around, and these guys, it's crazy. So anyways, it was a fun time. You know, it was not only nerve-wracking wondering what you're going to have to deal with in the accident, but it's nerve-wracking thinking about what you have to deal with a pilot who doesn't mind taking risk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I didn't write this down, but now I'm just curious. Were you always built in a way that you could handle nerves and pressure well, or is that something you develop over the span of your training?
I think it's a combination of both. I think I always had some sense of, I think it's my innate faith in where I am, who I am, and where I am going to go in living this life for just a short period of time. And I think that even as I was in high school, I remember, I think that probably gave me a sense of handling difficult situations with a bit of faith. It's not uncommon, even to this day, when things go bad, it would be uncommon if I didn't say a little prayer while I'm going through and taking care of difficult situations.
Cool. Now, I think this is kind of the next step in your life story.
Oh, wow.
On top of doing medicine, can you tell me about the old bagel company?
So, I'll tell you a story, and you can include it if you want.
Oh, no, it's going to be included.
That's why I'm giving you some pauses, so you can cut stuff out. I grew up in a home where my father was a very good businessman. So I always thought I'd go into medicine. No, I always thought I'd go into business. I'm sorry. And I never thought I'd go into medicine. And one day, I remember my grandfather was old and he was in a nursing home, and I loved older people and I wanted to start some nursing homes. So I put together a plan of how I could start a nursing home. But now I realize I'm a college kid. So I go to my father and I say to my dad, I said, could you or would you co-sign a loan for me? I would like to build a nursing home and start some nursing home care. And my father looked at me and said, you know what? Whatever you do, you'll be happier if you do it all on your own. And said, no. But my dad would pay for schooling until we're done with school. So I thought, well, okay, what the heck am I going to do? Well, I need some money to start a business. So how can I make some money? Maybe I'll go into medicine. So I went into, that's kind of how I got into medicine. But here's a plug of faith and a plug of doing things right. Bobby has heard this story before. You know, I remember one time I was in college, and if you're in medicine, especially if you're in anesthesia, you have a problem with being obsessive compulsive. You know, and when I was in college, you know, things were very competitive to get into med school. So you always are like, you know, I figured I needed a straight A to get into med school. I remember at one time I cheated on a test. I don't remember how I did. I wrote a formula down on my hand or something like that. And I thought to myself, you know, it was because I knew what I thought I wanted, where I wanted to go. And I cheated on that test. And with hindsight, now, don't get me wrong, I love what I do. I think I do it very well. But when I look back on that and I look at my love for business, I think if I would have had more faith and more trust in just letting God take control over where he wanted me to go in my life and didn't have to do something that wasn't right. I mean, and not honest, cheating on a test is not right. I think there's a chance I may not have gone into medicine. And as my dad said, when I got into med school, he was in his big easy chair and sat me down in the chair around him. And he says to me, he says, "You know, son, I am very proud of you. No one in the family has ever gone to medicine." He says, "I got to tell you, you know, one thing about medicine, you will always be comfortable. But I want you to know you could make a heck of a lot more money if you went into business." And I think looking at my experience with business since I've been in medicine, but I've been too busy to do a lot of medicine, do a lot of business because I've been very busy in medicine. I think that cheating on a test prevented me from, may have been the thing that put me into medicine where I may have been better off being a businessman.
That's interesting. Definitely is. So I know, like, in your heart of heart, you are a businessman. You just are. So tell us about the bagel company. Okay. I'm just very curious about how you got into it and then how it just fell apart.
Well, here's the deal. You know, Bobby started a company at one time. He started I don't know, what were those bags?
Oh, the nonprofit. Yeah. The Holding Hope bags.
Yeah, but that was before it was a nonprofit.
Yeah, it was before it was a nonprofit.
Yeah, yeah. So he had these bags and stuff. And he spent a fair amount, probably most of his life savings at that time in this thing. And I remember his mother was telling me that she felt so bad that this thing went belly up that I should bail him out and pay for those bags for him because that was such a hardship on him. And I said to her, I said, "No, there's not a chance." I said, "The only way you truly learn is if you have to go through these things." I said, "If I pay for those bags, then he's going to make the same mistake again and again." I said, "Until you lose your own money, it's really hard to learn some of these lessons." So this was one of my lessons. One of my lessons was, there was a good friend of mine who does, and he does placements for guys like Chipotle and some of McDonald's and Noodles and Brugger's. I mean, he does a lot of these big companies. He called me one day and he said to me, he said, "Hey, you know, there's this coffee company from Seattle that's coming to town. They're looking for investors. I think you should invest in it." What's the name of that coffee company?
Starbucks.
It's whichever one came from Seattle. And he said, "Yeah." He says, "You know what? They're making coffee. They're selling it for like $4 a coffee. And it costs like 15 cents to make it." And I'm like, "Oh my goodness. On the West Coast, sure, they'll spend that kind of money for coffee. But in the Midwest, there is no way anyone's going to spend that kind of money on coffee." Well, obviously, I'm not a coffee maker, a drinker, and I did not know that they were selling malts. I didn't realize that they were selling essentially a malt and not really coffee. So anyway, so I turned them down. Well, that was not a really wise decision, but you know. So now he comes to me and says, hey, there's these guys that used to work for Burger King. They're execs at Burger King, and they're starting the state franchise in Chesapeake Bagel Bakeries. He says, these guys have got the credentials. The franchise has been doing very well. Bagels were really hot at the time. He said, you want to be an investor. So, yes. So I thought, okay, we'll do this. So I remember before I invested, I was working with one of our attorneys and my accountant, and they said, you know, it looks like a reasonable opportunity, but they both said they would not invest. And the reason they wouldn't invest is because they said you're not going to have enough control over what happens. So I met with a guy starting this company, and I thought, yeah, okay, these guys seem like they should be fine. So I thought we'll just start out with one. And we started one, and I was a major investor in it, and it went very well. So we decided, well, this one went well, we'll open a second shop. So the second shop we opened, that one also was doing quite well. So then we started a third shop, and I remember these guys, there was another bagel company that was going out of business not too far from where we live, and we could have bought their assets for less than 50 cents on the dollar. And I remember telling these guys, this is what we should do. We can get a cut rate lease. We can get their equipment. We won't have to worry about competing with another bagel shop, five blocks away. The guy that was in charge of it said, no, we've got a better location. We'll just put them out of business. Well, what happened is after two successful businesses, these guys started getting a little pompous and a little headstrong, and they started expanding and doing stuff that was not going to be sustainable. And needless to say, they ended up tying all of the bagel companies together, and it ended up going out of business, and I lost my total investment in the thing, in something that was really, if I had more experience, now I do have more experience, so it makes me a better investor, I think. But it did, it taught me a lot. It was, as I tell Bobby, education is not cheap. College is not cheap. And the college that I had to go through to learn stuff like this was not cheap.
That's very interesting.
So it was a good thing to happen to me at a younger age, though. If that did not happen to me, if everything, I watch younger guys that are successful and they find it's so easy to make money that they think it's always going to happen. And I see so many guys that had great success when they were in their 20s and 30s, and they always thought they'd have that money. And then when they're 50, they're like trying to figure out where their next meal's coming from, because all of a sudden something happened. I think you see that in a lot of professional athletes too, that the money, when the money is easy, you treat it differently than what it really is. And when it comes too easy when you're young, then you just think it always just happens, and it doesn't.
Yeah. So you go from, you just have medicine be a whole part of your life, and then you do the bagel thing, then at this point, did you start the billing company with your group?
Yeah, somewhere around there, we started a billing and a consulting company with our group. I don't exactly know when the timing was. It might even have been simultaneously. And this company, I can't say too much about.
Yeah, that's because, fine.
But yeah, so we started that company, and it just reminds me of one of the saying, you always hire guys that are smarter than you. And I remember we were interviewing guys to run this thing and start it up. And I remember the one guy we were looking at hiring that is still there now and has been running it, has done just a fabulous job. I mean, this company has done better than we really ever anticipated it doing. And I remember he came in and he sat there and just shot the breeze and just was telling us this and that, and telling us we got to get our acts together, do this and that. And so we interviewed a bunch of guys, and I thought this guy was great. He was just so full of it. He was a great salesman, you know. And typically guys in medicine are not that much. They're bright. I work with some really bright, smart guys, but they're not really trained in business, and they haven't really seen a lot of business. So I remember the guy left, and everyone in the board said not to hire him. And I said, I think he's great. And I said, why? And I remember one of the docs said to me, I think it was the president of our corporation at the time, says, you know what? That guy is going to come. He's going to be telling us what to do. He's going to tell us when we can go to the bathroom, when we can do this, when we can do that. He said, I don't want a guy telling me what to do. And I just looked at him. I said, you know what? That is exactly what we need, is a guy who's going to run the business, because we're not going to be there running it. And this guy, he took this thing and ran with it and built this thing to a very successful business. So once again, hiring someone who's got better skills than you really can work out.
Yeah. And I think that brings up, so I think I might skip over a couple things, only because we're already 42 minutes in. But off of that, where did you learn or create this self-awareness or this confidence that you don't care who's better than you? You don't care what people think of you? I mean, just to give some context, like most people I meet with that have met you explain that they feel like they're on the same level as you. It doesn't matter what they're doing. It could be a janitor. It could be anyone. You're the same as all of them. And I still remember as a kid, you would just drive the beater of a Suburban with like holes in the floors, and people would ride with you to the house and they couldn't believe you actually lived where you lived, because they just didn't think someone that drove such a crap car could live in a house like that. Just where did you get that mindset? Because I think a lot of us need to do a better job of learning that in order to become more successful.
Oh, that's a funny thing. Yes. That's a, you know, as I told Michael, your brother, one day, I said, you know, you're never going to be successful unless you're happy with just what you are. I could be happy in an apartment. I could be happy. I mean, I don't need stuff to make me happy, I think, is what the point is. A friend of mine, who was a business partner of my dad's, the guy has got probably literally $1 billion worth of rental properties. This guy, I remember him driving an old car, didn't care, down-to-earth guy. And, you know, I've been fortunate enough to be at a handful of his different properties that, I mean, his house and his property up north on the lake and his place out in Vail, or places out in Vail. I mean, so, but, you know, you'd meet this guy and you would think he was a bum. And he drove his old car. And I still remember one time he was checking out a property and he was outside, wanted to know how high this ceiling was outside of this building, you know, the overhang. And he's out there jumping to see how high it was. And the police came over and stopped him and said, sir, no loitering around this shopping mall. So I don't know. I just you know, you talk about that old car. My brother, I remember, told me one day, he says, you know what? You are an embarrassment to the family with that car that you drive. And it's just like, I just, you know, there's other things that I'm more interested in than cars. I mean, not that I don't enjoy nice things too, because I do. I just don't need them to make me happy.
Yeah, for sure. So depending on what our audience thinks of this wonderful podcast, we might need to do a follow-up, because we haven't been able to touch on real estate. We haven't been able to touch on the fact that you're looking at creating a new medical device at the age of 61, which I think is fascinating, because I think more people need to hear that, at least our audience. If you're 20, you're really, really freaking young. So like, you have a lot of life. Like, you at 60, you're still interested in starting your next venture, because you know you have a lot of life yet left and you want to explore a lot of stuff. So hopefully we can do another one at some point.
Well, here's my view, though. My view is, you know, Moses didn't quit working until the dear Lord took him home. And I cannot do what I do It's just, it's physically, it's not an older guy's game what I do. So I have to figure out what I can do to still be productive once I quit doing what I'm doing.
Definitely. So we have 4 quick fire questions that we ask at the end of all of our podcasts.
As you can tell, nothing I say is quick.
So this is the random question. We let our audience just send us an email with the most random question they can think of. What would the world be like if it was filled with male and female copies of you?
God, I wouldn't want to live in it. It'd be just terrible. It'd be so boring. We definitely need a variety and a diversity to make this world a beautiful place. And to have just me out there would be terrible. One thing would be good, though. My brother said to me a little while back, he said, "What, have you ever thought what the world would be like if no one ever told a lie?" And that goes with no one stealing or telling a lie. And that might be one good thing, because, you know, the other day I was at Menards, and I went home, I looked at my receipt, and I noted they didn't charge me for an item. So I put it in my phone, I wrote down the SKU, and I have it in my shopping list, so the next time at Menards, I plan on paying for that. Because in my mind, if they charge me for something that I didn't buy, I would expect them to pay me back. But on the same line, if they don't charge me for something they gave me, I expect to pay for that. The world might be a more honest place. So let me just tell you something about physicians. Why physicians aren't always the greatest businessmen. Because as a physician, we have a tendency to be relatively honest in our dealings with patients and others. Because the deal is, if I'm dealing with a patient and the patient's got a big problem and I'm talking with another physician, I'm not going to candy coat the patient's problem. I'm going to say, "Listen, this is what's going on." When I talk to the patient, I'm not going to tell the patient, "Oh yeah, I think you're going to be fine." I think I'm going to tell them what it's all about, because that's kind of what we have to do. So what happens in guys that are doing medicine and business, they're not good at BSing. They essentially, everything they hear, they have a tendency to take for face value. They think people are essentially giving the story as straight as possible. And I think that happens a lot of time. That's why physicians sometimes get this bad rap of being poor businessmen. And the guys I deal with, they don't really understand a lot of business, but they are very bright. And when they get right down to doing something that they're doing, they're oftentimes very good at it.
Yeah, for sure. Second quick fire. You've worked with people in medicine and business. It's pretty much been your life for 40 years. What skills does a young professional need to focus on having straight out of college to do well in either business or medicine?
I'd say the most important thing is to have integrity and to be willing to do the hard thing. I'll tell you an example. I had a patient once, this was early on with HIV. I had an AIDS patient we were taking care of, and we finished this case. They turned the room over. The nurse anesthetist took a break when they turned the room over, so someone else turned the room over for him. And what happened is, next patient comes in, a young lady, probably about, 28, 30, married, and we put her to sleep and we give her an antibiotic. There was an antibiotic sitting there, and the nurse anesthetist comes back from a break and looks at the drugs that were given and said, "Oh my goodness, that one antibiotic, that was part of the AIDS patient's antibiotic. So it was in the patient's IV line and all." Well, we know that AIDS is transmitted through blood and things like that. So the deal is, the chances, there was a very, very low chance that this woman could potentially have contracted AIDS from an error that we created. So the chances if you look in the medical literature, are very, very small, but they're real. I mean, we're probably talking less than 0.5%. So we're talking very small. I remember some of the advice I received from some of the nursing staff is, oh, I don't think we have to worry about it. But I thought to myself, no, I want to treat this woman as I would want to be treated. So I went afterwards and I told her and her husband what we had done and that there was a possibility that she could get AIDS from our error. We put her on some, paid for it, put her on some anti-AIDS medications for 3 months and all, just as a precautionary. But, you know, that's just all the advice I had was don't do it. Everything in my gut was like, you know, just cover it up. But in reality, knowing what the right thing is to do and being willing to do the right thing, even though it's the hardest thing, is still the right thing. And I think that is advice I would give anyone on how to be successful. So now that I told you that story, I'm going to tell you another story. I bought an apartment building. And this apartment building was really run down. And it had to be, that was another very interesting thing. I bought this apartment building out of bankruptcy. I was going to the bank. I tried to buy it before I went to the bank. And the bank wasn't dealing with it. Got a call one day. It was like at noon or 10 in the morning. And they said, you know what? Okay, we don't want the bank. We don't want this. The bank called me and said, we don't want this apartment on our books. We will sell it to you now out of bankruptcy before we get it on our books. They said, there's another interested party. Are you interested? I said, I tell you what, I'll buy it. I'll give you 1 hour to see if the other party is interested. And I told them what I was willing to pay for it, hung up. They called me an hour, said the other party can't come up with the cash. Well, buying something out of bankruptcy, you cannot obtain title, so you have to come up with the cash. I had to come up with cash to buy this building in about 24 hours. I'm glad I had a good friend as a banker. So anyway, so I needed to do a lot of work on this thing, and we're going to fix the outside of it up. So I was getting bids to fix the outside of this thing up. There was a guy that was working to, a young guy, he was telling me he was starting his business. I said I'd be happy to give him the business to redo the whole outside of this building. And I was working with him a bit, and he was getting his crew put together and stuff. And I ended up one day getting a call from another company that had given me a bid saying this guy that I was going to go with was one of their employees and was doing this behind their back. And needless to say, I had a down payment written already. I canceled the check before it got cashed. And I called the guy and I told the guy, I said, here's the deal. If you would have been honest with me and told me that you were quitting your other job and you were trying to get into business, I would have hired you. But because you were scamming your business, I have no intentions of working with you. I said, you do a good job. The guy was bright. He was energetic. He was a good sales guy. But I told him, I said, until you can be honest and reputable, you will never be successful in what you're trying to do.
Love it. I really like that second story a lot, selfishly. Just can relate to it. Third question here. We're going to have to do these last two quickly now because you are just such a good talker. So what a blessing. What do you believe has to be sacrificed to become successful, if anything?
I think you just have to be willing to put the time in. And I think you do have to think about what you have to get up to be successful. Because oftentimes, I think people are so busy looking at success in a worldly fashion that they miss out on what is true success. And they miss out on really the things that cost nothing in life that are truly the things that make you happy, such as being connected to your family, your kids. And I think sometimes people are so busy looking at what success is, they fail to realize that there are some things that are more important to them that they're willing to sacrifice to have something that once they receive it or get to that point, they're like, oh my goodness, I spent all that time trying to obtain wealth. The saying is, it's funny, when we're young, we spend our health to obtain wealth. And then when we get older, we spend our wealth to try to get our health back. So the deal is, in my mind, is a balance to make sure that you know what's truly important, so you know what you're willing to sacrifice in your life to obtain success.
Well, health to obtain wealth, and then wealth to obtain health. I've never thought about it like that.
Yeah, so you think
that's a good saying.
You think of the number of people who spend their whole life working away so that they can retire. I have partners that want to work forever so they can retire. And I know guys that retired very wealthy, but they didn't enjoy the journey. They were so busy working, they didn't enjoy the journey on the way. And I know a couple of guys that have passed away shortly after they retired, guys that lost their health and had to retire and didn't really get to enjoy what they worked so hard for.
Definitely. Okay, last question. This one is relatively simple. Actually, it's not really simple at all, but what is one life hack young professionals should apply this week?
I guess I would have to say, if you're going to do anything this week, work hard, be focused, know where you want to go with what you're doing so you're not wasting time. One nice thing about medicine, there's a path. You get on the train and there's not a lot of wasting your time because it's already set up for you. When you go into business, it's a lot more difficult because there are so many different directions you can go. And it's so easy to get sidetracked and go down the wrong track to find out that's not really the track of the direction you want to go. So I guess the thing I'd say is just work hard, be honest, and know where you want to go and have a clear understanding of the things that are going to bring you to where you want to take your business.
Sweet. Awesome. So. Well, thank you, Dr. Mason. Thanks for being a part of the show. We really appreciate it. And it means a lot.
Well, thank you, Bob. Bob, I got to tell you, you do a great job. As I was thinking the other day, I told someone this the other day. I said, you know, I always try to hire guys that are smarter than me, that do a better job on stuff than me. And I said, you know, it's really fun when you got kids that became smarter than you and they're teaching you stuff all the time and you teach me so much. It's so much fun to watch. Thank you, Bob.
All right, thanks.
Okay, guys, Bobby Mason back here with you. And like always, some quick reminders from this podcast before we let you go. Number one, shameless plug. I'm going to do it again. I did it at the beginning of the show, but make sure you subscribe to the podcast. And this is pretty exciting. We have a new intern working on social media for Master of the Start, and we haven't done this in the past, but we will put the links to our social media pages so you can look at past quotes, past snippets, check out all the awesome stuff that you can learn from these experts. Number two, this is from Dr. Ronald Mason. Integrity always wins. It may not always make life the easiest, but it will make life the best. And number three, this week, this is your life hack. Here we go. Figure out what you want to get out of life as a business person. Write these things down and put them up on a wall, then be ready to work hard and stay focused. I could harp on this forever, but I want to make sure you guys can go out and enjoy the rest of your day. So thank you so much for joining us this week on the Master of the Start podcast. We love having you. We appreciate each and every one of you guys so much. Can't wait to see you next week, where we will have Steven Adams on the show. Bye, guys.